the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
You are listening to Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 202.
Excused absence.
Yeah, Tony is not with us today.
That's right. I'm Mary Tomich.
And this is Tom Lawrence.
There we go. And as you have just figured out, Tony is on vacation.
Yep.
So we hope he's having a good time. He posted pictures to Facebook with, you know, family pictures. So it looks like it is, like he is.
Yep.
So Tom and I are holding down the fort.
Running it solo.
Yeah. And we don't have a live stream.
You know, we didn't bring a camera. We rely on Tony for everything. We rely on him to press the record button.
Tony, we miss you.
This is the without Tony, Tom and Mary figuring it out. I do firewalls. Tony does audio streaming.
And I'm just another pretty face. So anyway, we're gonna carry on as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
While
he is offline in a campground.
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
Undisclosed campground.
Exactly.
So, we're confident he'll be back next time.
Yes.
So you've been listening to that.
That's as much as we got figured out.
All right. Yeah. That's the end of that episode. All right. No, just kidding. So, Tom, why don't you share what exciting, maybe computer open source stuff you've been working on?
Exciting.
Oh, you do that all the time.
I do it all the time. Let's see. I have been slowly looking at and playing with that Sandstorm. I know I said I was going to do a review of it. I didn't get far enough to do a review, because I got busy working. And
funny how work gets in the way. Huh?
Work got in the way of all my fun time. But I actually spent yesterday. I spent hours and hours on a firewall for a customer. I did this all remotely. So their IT wanted to replace the crazy ideas they had for IT. So this is what they did for network redundancy. And technically they're not wrong because this worked kind of.
Mm-hmm.
For redundancy of all the servers, they had two internet connections, but that's where it goes awry. They had two routers on the same network with each individual gateway. And then they took each Linux box and put two IP addresses and two different routing tables in it. Then, to make it more fun, they also have a network that crosses buildings and has multiple gateways per building with separated VLANs. So, I can't even, they asked me for a network map and a guy rudimentarily scanned a drawing with pencil. And I said, this has got to be one of the most confusing networks. I said,
was your customer the DNC?
Yeah. No kidding. Well, no, these guys cannot be hacked. No, you know how long it took me to figure out their network? You can't hack them. You can't sort this out. So,
it was working for them, right?
No, that's kind of why they called me.
Oh, okay.
They wanted something more unified than what they had, so they thought pfSense would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't disclose to me everything they wanted done, so the project kept getting bigger, but they had no problem. They understood. Because I was supposed to install the pfSense and set up failover and bond the two network cables together to do load balancing.
Okay.
That part was easy. Then what they didn't tell me was, oh yeah, by the way, here's all these crazy, static routes you need to put in that makes our network work. Oh, by the way, it turns out pfSense, and this is news to Tom because pfSense usually sits in the middle of the network. Mm-hmm. There's an asynchronous routing problem. There's a solution for it, but it creates a weird problem. If you create a bunch of static routes in pfSense, but then have it also firewall the routes, mm-hmm. you have to turn off certain packet filtering in pfSense or it drops the connections. Then I had to spend a bunch of time modifying all their Linux servers because instead of just setting up a network interface, this is where it gets even more fun. They put init scripts to keep overwriting every time they reboot, and they admitted that. So then I had to go sort out all the init scripts that would overwrite the network interface that every time they restarted the network. I'm like, okay, I see the live configuration and I see the network configuration. They don't match. How'd that get that way? Oh, I wrote this script and put it in an init script to overwrite what the network up does. And I'm like, why wouldn't you put it in network up? He goes, I don't know. I said, okay. So server after server after server.
Oh my goodness.
It was a lot of hours worth of work. I think I spent 8.5 hours on a project.
Wow.
So But it was fun and challenging because I've never seen anyone do this. Like, if anyone hacked them, they think it was a lab of trial and error. Like, how could we make this work? It was fun, though. That's one of my projects. Mm-hmm. I also been doing more and more YouTube videos and trying to become more focused on that and do two mm-hmm. or three YouTube videos every week, even if there's some shorter ones because of software reviews and things like that. I keep asking, what am I doing behind the scenes at my office? I love showing people. So now that I know there's more interest in it, I'm documenting more of it. And then an article came across Business Insider that set me off on a rant. So Yahoo has long, and so has a lot of other news sites, but Yahoo's been a culprit of it because they've regurgitated a not rewritten article for years. Mm-hmm. One of them was, be careful.
It's the Melania effect.
Yeah. Which, now Verizon owns Yahoo, so.
Yeah, that's right. That deal got, was it finalized or it wasn't announced?
I think it's
got
to go.
It was finalized last week.
Yeah, I think it's got to go through like, you know, SEC or whatever, regulatory commissions, to approve, but. Yeah, they got bought. But so Yahoo's been guilty of this. And one of the things I'll tell you is they talk about the nickel-cadmium batteries used. And I'm like, we quit using them like 9 years ago. But they actually will mention them in this Yahoo article. So I'm like, well, the article's just literally reposted, regurgitated with a new date. Well, Business Insider, who's generally a, you know, news rep, there's a tech writer there. And I tweeted him because he didn't reply. Well, my problem is they wrote an article about battery life and don't overcharge your cell phone. And I'm like, what do you mean? What? No. And all the information, all the technical details, mm-hmm. which were quite in depth, included screenshots from Battery University, which is all very accurate information, except for the fact that it was all done in 2010. Now, someone pointed out to me correctly, we are still using pretty close to the same chemical batteries that mm-hmm. we were from 6 years ago. But there's a major difference. We have figured out with software how to solve all the problems that were cited in 2010. Because what we do is we now developed an entire algorithm mm-hmm. and battery profile from millions of phones and all this battery use. So now we actually know exactly how to charge and discharge those phones very, very specifically to save from all the problems that they cite from this 6-year-old article. If anyone bothers looking at my YouTube video, I decided to go, it's in the comments. If you go to my website, lawrencesystems.com, you can click on my YouTube link. But one of the things I cited in a comment was exactly how the fuel gauge works on a battery to give you that. So it starts with what they call a column counter that's, you gotta remember, lithium ion charges and discharges in a non-linear fashion. It's not like older batteries, you can say this many volts means mm-hmm. it's this percent, but it's got an entire algorithm that's very complicated with numerous sensors all plugged into an algorithm to tell you the battery percentage and to understand how the battery's charged. So it's like we've solved all these problems. There's little things like that kind of bother me because you're spreading misinformation to people, telling them not to do something that is completely inaccurate. And you're a reputable source, so to speak, like Business Insider.
Yeah,
so
you create, I like that site.
Yeah, you create questions for people like me. Goes, well, I read this article from this reputable place that said not to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is as bad as the what was the big one? One of the big news sites had cited how to sideload apps so you could get Pokemon Go ahead of time. And then it had a virus in it and infected tons and tons of phones. Because if you went and got the APK, someone knew the game was getting hot, so they mirrored the APK on easier sites to download and embedded rootkits in it. So they were infecting phones all over the place.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like, these reputable sites got to think about that. When you talk about technology, you better understand it. Because mm-hmm. you're generally, if you're a mean outlet, you're a news site talking to the general public who's going to do whatever it is you say.
The general public who certainly doesn't understand it.
Yeah. So they expect you guys to understand the technology you're reporting
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
If I talk about something on the show, it's because I have some pretty good knowledge of it, and I'm always fine with someone who emails me and corrects me.
I'm glad one of us does that.
You know, we're the Sunday Morning Linux Review, but we use Windows. I mean,
hey, I've been...
Yeah.
I have been, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I have, and it's only by, it's by necessity because, you know, my upstairs, that my workstation is down while the renovation's going on, so.
But that was my, I've been doing.
But I hate it. I hate myself for it. And speaking of Windows, you know, that deadline just passed.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. Today, was it yesterday or today?
I thought it was the 29th. I thought it was Friday.
The bug, the virus pop-up that you get that says you should upgrade to Windows 10 is finally gone. The aggressive.
So long.
Yeah, so gone.
Yeah.
So. Oh, well, we will miss it, I'm sure. You know what? It's been great for business for me because my job is fixing Windows computers.
Sure.
You know, when I'm not deciphering incredibly complex networks that I keep pounding my head going, why? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, you're fixing Windows 10 upgrades.
Yeah, and I'm going to do a write-up, I think, on how complicated the network was. Like, this is what happens when a bunch of IT people it's like a 50-year-old company, just keep stacking ideas. And buying buildings that are all in different areas and then setting up fiber links between them and just keep building.
What is that called? It's not a, it's not a Rubik's Cube. It's called a,
the Russians thing.
The very complicated,
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, Goldberg. Yeah.
The Rube Goldberg of networks.
Yeah, there you go. So, it sounds like you were busy.
Busy, but those are the things that are fun. They're challenging. Mm-hmm. They're fun to do. Yeah. Cause it's not, I mean, I can install stuff all day and I hate the mundane of things. Mm-hmm. I liked it a little bit more other than the fact that it took more than expected, but the customer's willing to pay, to solve all those problems.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. It's different. So it keeps you engaged.
My servers are boring. They work. I didn't write init scripts 4 years ago that keep overwriting the network settings.
Oh my goodness. Well, anyway, so.
So you're in the middle of a home remodeling project.
I am. So this last couple of weeks, my, bathroom, more than one bathroom in my house. As I think I've probably mentioned before, my house was on the home tour. So the bathroom renovation project, I wanted to have that all set up and everything. And this bathroom hadn't been used in over 13 years. So it could be 15, 20. I don't really know, but, we found out that the hot water to that bathroom wasn't working. And this was after the estimate was done and everything, so that was a change order. And then we thought they were going to have to go through the second floor plaster, the beautiful original plaster, to get to the pipes. Well, we ended up going through the opposite wall, which was basically beadboard, you know, kind of a beadboard thing. And so that turned out not so bad. But anyway, so that has been consuming a lot of my focus and stuff, but I'm happy to say we're on the home stretch. I think the plumber comes on Monday and it'll be done. So as far as, you know, jumping in tech stuff, I just haven't done a lot of it other than some, you know, the show prep and that type of thing. But my Linux rig is just sitting there unplugged up there because furniture stuff is just all over the place. So
yeah, and for those who maybe didn't listen to one of our previous episodes, Mary has a very classic
old
awesome house in Detroit.
Yeah.
You're in a wonderful historic district and you're on the home tours. So.
Yeah, 90 years old.
90 years. Okay. I was asking you when it was made.
Yeah.
We have some beautiful houses in Detroit. And there's a lot of areas around here on this. Once you get this side of the country, the older side of the country, that where we built some really cool stuff.
Yeah. Brick and it's really nice. So yeah. So that's what's going on. But last year, one of the projects, and I think I mentioned this on one of the episodes, was to drop a network cable, through the walls from the third floor to the second floor. Because, my router and all my internet comes in through the third floor. So I wanted to have a wired connection to the second floor, not just do wireless.
Yeah.
I mean, wireless is obviously available, but, so that was a little project because you had to, I think Matt had done it. He had to shimmy down the eaves inside between the wall and the roof.
Ooh.
And do all that work. He came out of there and he was just a mess, I'll tell you. I said, thanks for dusting my attic.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's kind of what I've been up to. So I'm glad it's over though. Went to the Tigers game last night. And they won. They won in the bottom of the ninth inning with a walk-off infield single.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. So anyway, but that's pretty much me.
The games are always more interesting when they're close.
Yeah, I was.
No one goes to watch someone get completely annihilated.
I think the game before was like 13-6 or something like that. It was a huge, just a big differential they won. So anyway, but that was kind of exciting. So yeah, so that's kind of what I've been up to. So next time we record, I'll be back to normal.
You have all your stuff set up. You can just do tech stuff and not have to worry about house stuff.
I'm so anxious to get back on my workstation because it's wonderful. I mean, you know, Windows is okay. It's Windows 7 and, you know, I've got programs that run on it, but I love my workstation.
Exactly. I'm not a house person. Like, I don't I still haven't cleaned up all the branches in the very back of I got an acre and I haven't cleaned up all the branches from the tornado that we had 3 weeks ago now.
I thought you were going to say 3 years ago.
maybe one or two from three years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, we don't use the back of my yard. There's mosquitoes there.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. I bought my house because it's an investment, not because I like yard. Like, I'm the opposite. I don't want yard. I'd be fine to live in a condo other than I'm allowed, so I can't live in a condo.
Okay.
I think movies should be listened to at a volume they were meant to be listened to.
I'm glad I'm not your neighbor.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons I don't have neighbors.
Oh, there you go. So you got a house.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're on an acre of land.
Right.
All right. Well, good. All right. Well, I think we've done a heck of a job catching up.
Yep.
So time to move on to listener feedback.
Yes.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right. And there's at least one piece of listener feedback that's directed at me and Mary, which is good because me and Mary are here. We're the culprits of this. Hold on.
Yes, we are.
One second. Let me pull the person's name up here. It was from Israel.
Yes.
Was the name.
I remember that.
Yes.
And I think it was due to show notes.
Show notes. Yes. This is what me and Mary are guilty of, is adding the show notes. We need to put it on there. Tom has mentioned a few times a hard drive wipe station. Could you give a link to the project? Honestly, if you go to lawrencesystems.com and go to my YouTube video, I do have the project documented. It's called the Hard Drive Shredder. Inside the notes is including the GitHub links and everything. Now, I need to, and maybe I'll add this to this show notes, because me and Mary were talking about this before the show. Mm-hmm. We're like, there's no Tony here, and we should do show notes. And we're like, oh, yeah, we should always do show notes, and that's part of our listener feedback. So, yes, we will work on getting all the notes in there, and maybe even in these show notes, I'll throw a link into the Hard Drive Shredder. People who follow me on YouTube know where this stuff is because I don't think about it as much. I need to work on a way to index my YouTube as well. I always tell people go to my website and find a link. The problem is until
you put tags on there or anything like that?
You do, but until your channel is absolutely huge,
okay,
you get buried in every other channel because they're sorting kind of by popularity of channel, unless you have a really, really specific piece of content. Like it, then no one else has. So like my PF Sense, I come up first because they're really popular videos with 100,000 views and I have several PF Sense videos.
Okay.
But things like my hard drive shredder has like 400, 500 views. So
people start going there.
If people start going there, once it gets the views, it'll show up higher because YouTube makes the assumption that thousands of views means it's a better video. So, which kind of, it's funny. It works different than, it's not a good video.
Yeah, there you go. Views mean better video.
And it's one of the tricky things when you're talking about Linux and tech. Firewalls obviously are popular, so they get 100,000 views. Hard drive shredding stations are niche. I've messaged a lot of people. There's another listener who reached out to me. I helped him build one at a school. And he's using it to help wipe all the data as hard drives get decommissioned and things like that. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me and it's become very useful for a lot of people.
That's good. But
I say a lot of people, I mean like 10, which for this type of project, that's kind of a lot
of
people.
It's all relative.
Yeah. It's niche. And obviously when the listener Israel is interested as well, but we will make sure we start getting all of our show notes in there.
Okay. Yes. We both are guilty of that.
Yes.
You know, it's I'm not even going to go on. But yes, loyal listeners, we're going to do a better job of that. All right. And I think I don't recall seeing anything else. Did you see anything else? Was there one other one?
Yep. Mark Greaves. Mark at peppermintos.com.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for the review, episode 201.
How did I miss that?
He's thanking you because you did the review.
Oh, okay. Well, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to do that review. And actually, the laptop I've got sitting in front of me is running Peppermint right now.
Yes. And that's what he said. Thank you very much for the review and the favorable review at that. So he's glad we liked it, which we did. And well, you're still running it. So, you know, if he's listening to this show, Mark, we are, well, I'm not, but she's still running it. I'm certainly going to take a look at it myself. I'm kind of boring sometimes because I have production computers, so mm-hmm. I'm always running the same production software.
Yeah, no. And, you know, as I said during, as part of that review, I liked it because it's a lighter weight. Distro.
And it runs good. You have an older laptop that your older Dell, and it mm-hmm. flies on there. So, So thank you very much, Mark. And thank you for your efforts with Peppermint OS.
Exactly.
We're happy with it.
Yep. So anyway,
we have some Japanese spam. Should we skip that? Right.
Hey, speaking of Japanese spam, I want to say it was Danny Meeks, but he posted, I don't know if you've seen these Japanese videos on YouTube where they have this cooking. It was cooking with tiny utensils, making tiny donuts.
Okay.
So I'm not kidding you. They had the little stove was like a little candle thing, and they cooked these donuts in a little pot with a few drops of oil, and then they had this tiny squeeze bag with frosting, and they. It was the tiniest set of donuts, so I said, I'll have a gross, please.
I want donuts now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so they had six of them in this little box, and the box was probably about an inch by maybe 3/4 of an inch. Yeah, I think it was about that size. It was very small. So, you know, needless to say, you'd need a couple hundred of those to make one donut. One donut, we would consider a donut, but it was kind of cool. So.
Anyway. Very cool. Last one is from Lyle. He donated some money to us. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much because, you know, we're going to...
Actually, hold on. That's confusing. No, I think he didn't. I mean, I'm confused. Tony has that as the header, but it's not what it says in here.
You know, I think it was from a while back, wasn't it?
Yeah. Maybe he did before.
Yeah, he did, I think. Somebody did. Yeah, I think he did.
Because there's an old email that Tony forwarded with the person's name. So, but this is another listener feedback from Lyle, who says, thank you very much. And he says, it took him a long time to understand what we were talking about. As I guess Lyle's learning Linux. And now he's, I didn't hear my email listener feedback. Okay. That's why he resubmitted it.
Oh, okay.
So could you please read it for me? The Rebellion Linux guy really helped me.
Rebellion.
Rebellion.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because he's the guy, he's Indian, and he, for $5, you get unlimited support.
Okay.
So, yep, and I remember that. I want to say, didn't we? I almost thought we talked about that before, but I might be mistaken.
There's a dig at you in here, Mary. I'm going to throw this out there. He says, I'm sure making fun of Mary's jokes had nothing to do with the email getting overlooked or somehow deleted. Mary didn't happen to run an email server for the recent DNC.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't run an email server for the Democratic candidate that also lost emails.
Yeah. No, I don't think I did. Oh, that's a mess.
But yeah.
We'll talk about that other time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. So, yes, thank you very much, Lyle. Thank you. Everything. Sorry, we're a little bit scattered because Tony forwarded some of this, and I don't know why I have this email, but mm-hmm. I didn't see it last time either, so I'm kind of at fault too. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where it went because the one I have that Tony forwarded to us, but then it's now attached to another email Tony forwarded that someone made a donation. So
see what happens if Tony's not here. We can blame him for everything.
Tony is the glue that holds us together. So we're really sorry.
We're barely functioning today.
So Tony, next time he comes back, is going to be reading listener hate mail going, Tom and Mary screwed everything up.
That's right. All right.
Yeah.
So,
anyway. Yeah. And what we have to do, and maybe this is, we're going to actually have a meeting with Tony, because we realized where some gaps are.
Yeah. But we can't have the meeting at a bar.
Okay. Yeah. So we won't.
Oh, maybe we can.
Maybe we can. We just got to have it before all the beer. But, I'm going to consolidate some of this. I'm actually going to talk to Tony about, setting up a box that we can all, a common shared box we can go to, because the problem is when they're forwarded, there's all these other things he forwarded with it. And so it made it a little bit hard for me to read. I don't know where it went, but maybe we'll set up a common shared box between us. It just popped in my head because it would have been much less confusing.
Maybe that's show.
That is the box. It's supposed to distribute to all of us, and instead it.
Yeah, we'll get it worked out.
Something else happens.
Yeah, we'll get it all fixed.
So we'll get it all fixed.
Yeah.
So we will certainly address this issue and have a listener feedback that's more concise and more accurate. And that way all the Japanese spam is in there and we can separate it.
You know what I did once? I did run, I want to say it was in kanji, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I dumped one of those into the Google Translate just to see what it was. It was just this.
It's a bunch of movie titles, I think.
Yeah. It was, just kind of gibberish.
Yeah. It's gibberish. Well, I guess interpreted it's gibberish, but it's actually we get spam from Japan that's all movies.
I don't understand the purpose of that. Are they just testing the relays?
I don't know.
You know, when you get something like that, it has no value. Usually spam, it's, you know, some kind of product. So, yeah. But anyway.
I guess it's movies. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Is it time for?
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
And it's time for Distro Fever.
Yes.
That's right. The hottest distros and all that cool stuff out there. And actually, I don't know if you've been looking at it. I'm sure you have. But I usually go to DistroWatch to kind of see what the latest is out there.
Yep.
And I have, although it's still in beta, I'm getting kind of excited here because FreeBSD.
11?
Yep.
Yep.
It's, I think it's in second or third beta. So I'm pretty happy about that. Looking forward to the final version coming out. So I'm keeping an eye on that. And then there was something else here, too. I was kind of caught my eye, and that is, well, we've got, you know, OpenSense release, and that's, of course, it's a firewall
yep.
router.
And PFSense is a new update. They released the 232 on July 25th or 26th, just a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I've already updated my servers, in my client servers. Honestly, the upgrades, I tell people, I do them remotely with PFSense. I'm like, I do backup always before I just run a quick config backup in case I don't have a recent one. Config backup, hit upgrade, wait, you know, a few minutes and it works. They have a extremely smooth upgrade process, which is good for firewalls because you love stability in a firewall.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Because we all need that internets.
Yeah, we need the internet.
We need the internets.
You know, another one that caught my eye here too, and Tom, you're familiar with Triskel, which is, I believe, the Libre free, you know, the open source only software. They don't have any kind of binaries or anything in it.
Yeah.
I think it's based on Ubuntu or Debian. And
with all the non-free removed.
All the non-free removed. Well, it appears that they've got a version out there now, and or at least a release of Arch Linux-based version called Parabola.
Okay.
So, and I don't recall hearing about that before, but, so they've got one over there for folks who like Arch, but don't like those non-free bits in the release.
So if you, are a big Stallman fan.
Or if you're a little Stallman fan.
Yeah. Or you just buy into this complete Stallman philosophy. Not that it's bad at all.
Yeah.
He's just pure. It better be there, which is good. We need those people. We really, really do.
Mm-hmm.
Ubuntu on your LTS has got 16.04.1. So that's an update to their long-term support release, 16.04. Let's see. They have minor bug fixes in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing is you can download you can download it without having to upgrade to it. So you can just, if you're doing a new install, you can grab it.
Okay. Okay. And, oh, you know, and speaking of Parabola, they hadn't had a release since 2012 because I was thinking to myself, I just didn't recall the name, but their releases are kind of few and far between. So, and actually, this is the second release of that. That first release they came out with in 2012, October, as a matter of fact. So,
I know we don't do it as often, but I thought it was kind of funny. When you look at the rankings over the last 6 months, like,
mm-hmm.
All the Linux distros are trending down. Like, there's hardly anything trending up. They're all just down, 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 down.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Over the last 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look over on the page hit ranking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, we're counting page hits, but they're still trending down.
Yeah, that is kind of like, okay, where's Magia and all that?
It's like everyone stopped using Linux.
Yeah.
They got their latest patches.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I think there is a a mass of people who look at stuff when there's a new release or something major, which when we get to the news section, we can talk about the new kernel, the psychotic sheep.
Oh, that's the name? Good. We'll talk about it.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
And so, then, I'm sorry, psychotic stoned sheep. Let me be accurate.
PSS.
That's better than herder, I'm a sheep.
Yeah, herder, I'm a sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
This is
you're
much
right.
better.
And actually, just out today, there's a couple of them too. Parsix Linux just came out today.
Yeah.
Because as a matter of fact, when I was reviewing the list earlier this morning, I don't think that was there.
Nope, that's brand new.
Yeah, Rescatux. Because I looked at this list and I thought, holy smokes, there's a bunch of new ones. Yeah, they did a big update today on DistroWatch, just so you're aware.
Yeah. No, the Rescatux looks interesting too.
I think I've used that before.
You know, I've been blessed enough that I've never
not
had
to have problems.
Not to have to recover a Linux system. But I'm so crazy about backups and with things, you know, I'm in a long time and I haven't switched to Nextcloud yet, but I still run on cloud. Mm-hmm. So I have live file synchronization. So there's not anything like, oh, I didn't back up since last night. As I do things, it's being backed up and synced. My entire directory of stuff that's important is all on that. So there's really never, there's never a time where, oh no, it crashed. I could lose everything. It's real time because I would never back up if I didn't do it in real time.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. But you know, the nice thing about, at least as you get more familiar with Linux and you start to dig a little deeper, and something goes wrong, I think to myself now, when I was brand new, I just thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to reinstall it and what's going on? And then now I think to myself, well, it could be a little issue with grub. It could be this or that. No big deal. I'll just if I can't fix it on my own, I'll just throw a rescue CD in there and kind of move through the menus and get it fixed. So that's always nice. And I know I've used, I haven't used it recently, but I have used Rescatux before.
Yeah. It's gotten, you know, installing Linux has become so much easier. And then I'm always a benefit of Debian distributions because I have a list and I drop the list in. It's a script. It says apt-get install, all these things that I use all the time. And it just, anytime I load Linux, I apt-get run the list. It dumps, it takes a little while because it's so much to download. So I always do it at work.
Sure.
It loads all those programs and I copy my backup of my home folder in there and all the configuration settings follow with it and I'm done. It's boring. You know, I use HexChat for IRC. I don't have to know anything. I just drop the config file in.
I really like that idea because I do something like that, but I do it manually.
Yeah.
Which I think putting
you
it
can
in
script
a little,
it.
And it's easy. That would be relatively easy to do, I think.
Yeah. You can make a bash script even apt-get install.
Yeah.
And what
that's
I
what
do
I was
is
thinking
whenever
of.
I add something, like I'm always testing software. Mm-hmm. And if I really like it, I just run that. I just go to that script again because it's always backed up and I add one more tool to that script.
Okay.
So I just throw one more thing in there and you're not even really a tool. All you're doing is adding the name of it. It's space, name. All right, save.
And then, you know, because you want to keep your configuration files and when you install something, they usually will put in a base set of, configuration. So what happens then is you just automatically overwrite that base configuration or do you just let it prompt you?
Well, no, what I do is, I install everything because it's like a clean load. So I install everything and then I overwrite them.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Because then I just drop in my config files for things like, you know, HexChat or Caden Live, and I just drop it over the configuration file and just done.
Now, have you ever run into a problem where
if there's different versions, I have to be careful. So if I load something and I was not using the latest version, I'm using a new version, I know it may break the config files.
Okay.
So I have to be conscious of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Well, it's rare because I'm always –
It's a very short period of time, so a new version of something would likely not have come out anyway.
Yeah, when I'm reloading, because I'm always up to date. So it's not really run. It's not really been a big issue. Mm-hmm. Unless I switched distributions, I did have problems when I switched to the KDE distribution because it was using slightly different packages. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a newer version, which I was like, exciting. And then the file didn't line up. So I had to open up. They're all in XML, so I just had to manipulate a little bit of data in there to fix it.
All right.
But. All right. That is the distros.
Yeah.
And how I upgrade distros, apparently.
Yeah. I'll be looking for something interesting to review. Some in an upcoming episode.
Yes, because we have something else for our fresh looks this time.
Yeah, we do. Which will be airing next episode.
Next episode.
Even we'll though we're recording it today.
Yeah.
All right,
moving on to
tech news and views.
The news.
News.
All right, time for the news.
Yeah, that's right. I said that already. Yeah. it is time for the news. So Tom.
All right.
You got any news for us?
There's some news. I did find something interesting. I have not tested it, but a lot of people seem to find it very favorable. It's called
Pokemon.
Pokemon. Yeah. I wonder if we've reached the Poke Peak yet. I'm starting to actually see a few less people at the park.
You know, it was very funny. I think you had posted something on not YouTube. It was, I want to say Facebook.
Probably.
That lawnmower.
Yes.
Oh my God. I laughed at that. I just thought.
It's a Pokemon getting run over with a lawnmower.
Yeah. It was very funny because somebody had it in their sights and suddenly there's this lawnmower goes across it and it's gone. So anyway.
Yeah. The Borg, and I just like the name, Borg Deduplicator Backup. And it's a synchronizing backup system that has deduplication in there. And what that is a system by which when there's duplicate files, you end up in, you have a lot of them, you have duplicated data. It has a deduping system as a integrated part of it. And sounds pretty neat. So, just reading the specs on it. And of course, I've seen some of the reviews and some discussion on it. People seem to love it. And I might give it a try. I've got a really archaic backup system that does not have deduping, for the way I synchronize some of my servers. So I may look at that and see if there's a, advantage to using it and replacing the stuff I designed. I want to say the backup system I have maybe from 2006 or 7. It's pretty old. But it works. I mean, it's the servers are all new, but the script is really old. Mm-hmm. And it's, I have a revisioning script that allows me to keep 30 days of backups on there with its own, it does deduplication based on change, but not on actual deduplication. So, which I should probably release how I did that too one day. Tony, I sent it all to Tony and yeah. It's not something I can publish to GitHub because I'm not the original proprietor of it. And I don't know if the guy is. He has a GitHub, but then I take it and modify it. So do mm-hmm. I fork it or do I just say I used his? I don't know. I got to look and see how much different. What changes I made, which I can barely remember. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I was just,
what license does it use?
I believe it's all GNU, but okay. He doesn't have it on GitHub. He says on a website.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a simple bash script.
Sure.
But it's fairly complex because of it looks for last time you back up and creates a folder of any files that have changed by date and then creates a series of subfolders based on date. So it's complicated, but simple. The end result is simple. The code's a little bit complicated. So it's technically something that should be on GitHub. It's not like a one line script that you wouldn't waste your time with. It's a long revision change of features. So, but anyways, that is Borg backup. If you, Borg deduplicating backups, you'll find the site for that because this URL is really long. I do kind of like it's borgbackup.readthedocs.io. Read the docs.
Yeah.
A new version of GIMP out.
294. Oh, 294. Okay. Yep. I saw that.
And there's an article on there, GIMP and our vision of the future. Mm-hmm. They kind of talk a little bit about where they're going with the product. Because some people were saying, why don't you make it more Photoshop like? GIMP's like at their own direction because they have their own following. So they have some information on that. Mm-hmm. I'm still not into GIMP and it just doesn't work the way I want. And a lot of people said the same thing. It's like until Photoshop, I seriously like Photoshop in its workflow. And someone, there's some debate going on in one of the forums and one of the guys like, you could use it if you just change your workflow. And the guy pointed out a way to use GIMP to make do with what me and some other people are talking about. But I like what he said. He had three programs, how you have to go through and edit it in three programs. I'm like, that's not changing my workflow. That's adding to my workload.
Yeah.
Because if I have to use three programs to accomplish a layer transition that I just did in Photoshop in a matter of two clicks, it's not a workflow problem. Mm-hmm. I don't mind changing my workflow. I change my workflow to learn Caden Live versus other video editing tools that are more complete. But when you talk about, just open these three programs and close and save the file in each format, bring it up. I'm like, no, you've just made my life hell. I just need a quick thing for a video with some text and a shadow or underneath. Yep. That's it.
Yep.
And yeah, I need to work on that. Oh, Walmart. Let's talk about Walmart.
Do we have to? No, yeah, I'm just kidding.
No kidding. Well, I don't. The article title did make me laugh. Walmart proves open source is big business. Really, Walmart? Fascinating.
Oh my God.
So, let me think. This would have been 6 months ago. We talked about one of the shows that Walmart was building a big data center and part of the OpenStack initiative, which we kind of feel as though it was a dig at Amazon. Like, this is their way they're going to compete. They said, okay, we're going to compete in the data center side and things like that.
Sure.
But they inadvertently tripped over the fact that you can make money in open source. They're like, what? Giving all of our secrets away turned out to be very helpful because other people joined in and did it. Because once Walmart did it, some other companies did it, and they all contributed back. And now they have a better versions of the software in the concepts they released.
Funny how that is.
Wow. Yeah. So Walmart discovered what all of us have known for a long time. That open source thing isn't going away. It's popular. It works. Yeah. And seeing as the Linux kernel has been around for a couple of years. Yeah. We'll just say it's proven before Walmart. Walmart just woke up a little bit. Well, let's see. Oh, this is Microsoft showing some love. The kind of love when they squeeze a product to death. They had a tweet from one of the developers over at Minecraft. And, you know, Minecraft was purchased by Microsoft. And just like how when Skype was purchased by Microsoft, oh, no, we'll keep the Linux version up to date that doesn't exist anymore. I don't think they've updated it. To Microsoft's defense, they also took a long time before they updated the Windows Phone version. They updated their Android and iOS versions without updating the Windows Phone version and aggravated the Windows Phone users who go in, we're loyalists and we loved you and we bought your crappy phone that no one else would buy and you didn't update Skype for us. I remember that being such a great argument.
And you know why they did it. There's such a small percentage that use that Windows Phone, right?
The other reason they did it, they integrated it into the OS of the phone and not as an application.
Oh, okay.
So the only way to get an update would be to update the OS. And they do
and get a new phone.
They do OTA, pushes for their OS updates, but they're very complex and it's an entire OS update. So it's one of those things like, yeah, we should have probably had it as a separate app. Cause even you see Google with Android, that's how they're doing the security patches. Mm-hmm. They're separating more and more so they can update things incrementally without doing an entire OS upgrade every time.
Okay.
Makes sense. That's a logical way to do it. That's the way it's not just one big monolithic piece. And that's kind of how they did the Windows Phone.
Sure.
But, yeah. They're not clear that they're going to do, there's a new launcher coming out for Minecraft and they're not clear that they're going to keep supporting Linux on it. So there's that.
Okay.
They said for now the old launcher will work, but of course there's going to come a point where they're going to abandon it. And Minecraft has had a loyal Linux following, including my kids who do run it on Linux because they use my laptop to play Minecraft. I admit they have a Windows desktop because they have some games that they can't do on there. Let's Encrypt is supporting IPv6. So I guess they've been fully integrated IPv6 into there, which is pretty cool. If you're not familiar with the Let's Encrypt project, I forget how many they've released now, but just millions of sites are encrypted. They're getting easier and easier to use. It works really well. I'm using it myself and I've been really happy because, it's the easy, I just went through an install of an SSL cert that was way more of a pain than it should have been. It was when we had to purchase because it was for some, business stuff. Yep. And we had to purchase it. And I'm like, why is this so hard? Like this was, including the SSL company, I'm not going to name them because it was kind of, they lost the email twice with the security cert in it, with the signing stuff. And I'm like, and it's because they merged tickets because I opened one ticket and they told me I couldn't do it the way I wanted to do. So I had to wildcard the domain because of the subdomains. And I said, that's no problem. So we did that. And they said, yeah, reinitialize a new one and we'll do a new cert. Well, then they merged the tickets together. And when they merged the tickets, they lost the signing cert I sent them. So then they didn't reply for 2 days because they thought it was an old ticket because they merged it to the old ticket number.
Oh my goodness.
And then the signing failed because they were using the old information, not the new information. Yeah, but with Let's Encrypt, you type a command line, I press a button, and my websites are all encrypted.
Hey, you were talking about that network. It wasn't at that company, was it?
No. No, the last thing they need is an SSL cert. They have so many other problems. The last thing they need is that. Like, that's, oh, man. The CIA discovered open source, more specifically, open data sets. And they're now... I guess they spoke at some conference and the CIA director says, this open source thing is kind of neat. we have lots of public data about people. So, yeah. So they're going to be.
Who published SE Linux?
Oh, I don't know.
It wasn't them, was it?
Was it the NSA? I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of like you just discover it. Now it's been out there for years.
Yeah, I know. It's like you're discovering it. And they're going to use the open data sets to combine that. There's a hardware. Tom's Hardware has an interview with the CEO of Canonical. And just, I'm not going to get too in-depth on it, but it's a good read if you're interested. Jane Silver, the CEO. So he kind of talked about being the CEO of a big tech company, and it's a combination talk of women in tech, because there's not a lot of women in tech, as we know, and there's very few of them running large, huge companies like that that are big in the open source. I mean, the only other big tech company with a prominent female was Yahoo. And I say was because of the pending sale to Verizon. A couple interesting things about Facebook got announced at their earnings call the other day.
Boy, and it's funny you say that because from the financial markets perspective, I had my eye on Facebook. And
do you know why their stock went up?
I can't remember. I'm sorry to say, because I didn't really check. Somebody was mentioning it, and I took a look at the chart, and I thought, holy smokes, that's a little rocket.
Well, yeah, what it did was Mark got up there, and when he released the information was, they now have 1.7 billion active users. Now, the only thing I'm surprised Wall Street didn't get shocked about was...
What's an active user?
Active
all
users.
Those spam, all those spam bots that place that...
Well, they have over 2 billion users, but they define an active user as someone who logs in, I think, with every less than... You have to once every 7 days you're considered an active user or more.
Okay.
But this is what got Wall Street excited, because active users, cool. Twitter has a lot, and they can figure out how to monetize them. Facebook averages $3 per person per quarter across the globe. Now, that's one part to get you excited. They average in the U.S. $14 per person per quarter.
Wow.
So, Now that.
They get nothing from me.
Yeah. They get nothing. Yeah. But you know, if you're blocking ads or not, but they're averaging that much money per person they have. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, they probably are getting something, but
it's all the ad dollars.
And I'm only in there because of the political season. I will be exiting that.
Yep. It's entertaining to read.
Yeah.
And of course, that's exactly what's driving it up. They probably have more people are active now on Facebook because it's an election season, presidential election season now. So people are just ranting and meme posting at a staggering rate.
I can't believe how, I stop myself and I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here.
And people are spending more time on the site because they're spending more time arguing with each other. And Facebook doesn't care what you argue about. They care that you're there. So I thought that was kind of, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the dollars helped because at some point they're kind of hitting a ceiling. How many people are in the world on the internet? That's like their challenge. Like, we need more internet because we could get more people. What are they doing over in these third world countries? Can we get them internet?
Yeah.
They need to get on Facebook and argue about politics with everybody else so we can sell ads to them.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they still have a few billion more people, but the challenge now isn't getting people to sign up at all. It's getting internet to them. That's like their market barrier.
Because the rest
is
of it
internet.
Is kind of in place, and you just got to get the I'll say portal, but I mean just the method of access to them.
Yes. So let's finally talk about the Psychotic Stone Sheep. We have added a lot of cool stuff.
Hey, I got a question on that name. Is it Psychotic Stoned Sheep?
Stoned. It is stoned already now.
Okay.
We have lots of updates. We've got AMD and NVIDIA, lots of GPU rendering support, so we love seeing that. So we're going to see a lot better graphics in there. Mm-hmm. Lots of new ARM pieces were put in there. So, yes,
I know
ARM parts.
I
you know where I'm going with it.
I know exactly what you mean, you know, seriously, but it's just the way you said that.
I know.
Crack me up.
I am happy to say they're going to be updating their DisplayPort parts.
Okay.
And if you're not familiar with DisplayPort, that is the...
That's for monitors, multiple?
That's for multiple monitors, and it's also kind of a little bit of a successor to HDMI, which has some limitations.
Okay.
And with the fact that HDMI, only the latest 2-point version support 4K monitors. DisplayPort supports 4K and beyond.
Okay.
So as we get more and more resolution, DisplayPort's the solution to that. The solution to the resolution. But the problem with it is Linux support's kind of not great, and I guess they fixed a lot of issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we talked about multiple monitors a few weeks ago or months, yes. a couple months
because
ago.
Because it was one of the reasons I switched. Yeah. I couldn't keep KDE going. It's because of all the problems I have multiple monitors. And I will admit, Ubuntu, including on scaling, it works really well in the 16 mm-hmm. version. Monitors, I can take them, add them, remove them, slide them around, and no problem. I mm-hmm. can dock my laptop and it just grabs them. But it does eventually run into some problems where some people are like, oh yeah, I have to reboot or things like that when it goes to sleep. Cause I remember there was some bug in DisplayPort that would force the monitors when they go to sleep not to wake back up. And there's like all kinds of little problems with mm-hmm. DisplayPort. It just like wasn't working quite good. Okay. They also added more virtualization. So enhanced for KVM and other x86 virtualization enhancements are going to be in there. It's going to be on the AMD x86 and 64 platforms. For that. So that's kind of, at least as I read, I could be wrong. But either way, virtualization is getting better in the new kernel, which isn't too surprising because, once we hit the 4 gigahertz limit with processors and then we try to figure out how many, we run into the quantum effect trying to make them smaller and faster mm-hmm. transistors. The solution really has been virtualization. Don't scale up, scale wide. So take a problem. Break it down into lots of servers, lots of mini problems, and it turns out they're really good at that. And that's, it's kept the platform alive because we thought we'd be running 30 gigahertz processors at some point. And we would go, oh yeah, there's kind of some physics problems with that. Then we kept saying, add more transistors. They go, there's a physics problem with making it smaller. You've now gotten too small and now you've got quantum effects problems because you've exceeded these physics laws. So we just make more of the same processor. Mm-hmm. And with better programming and virtualization, we break the problem up into a smaller problem. So Linux is really on the leading edge of that. And I know mm-hmm. some of the new Intel chips I'm hoping are well supported in there. That was a problem with the old versions of older kernels was the newest – what's the name of the chipset? The latest Intel chipset, which has a lot of great enhancements, was not fully supported in the previous ones.
It's not Haswell. It's Atwell after that.
It's after Haswell. It's
Ivy Bridge?
Skylake, is it?
Oh, you know
– Skylake, I think they are.
That sounds familiar. I think that might be it.
It has enhancements for some of that because it's updated to the new ACPI version. So there's going to be a lot of great things coming. And something odd I found that they ported from Chrome, as in the Chrome OS, the Google project. Mm-hmm. It was a special segregation of loading drivers to the kernel.
Okay.
I thought it was a weird commit because this is the Chromebooks are essentially based on Linux, but then they brought something back to in the virtualization, virtualization, but in the way they load drivers into the kernel for better protection. So that was ported over.
Oh, nice.
And for all the other comments on it, you may go to, I think we brought this up before. There's a Linus rant collection. And I noticed with the release of the kernel, apparently he ranted about a few things like Linus always does. I realize there's an entire subreddit that's just dedicated to him ranting. It's all the text of his rants of whatever he's angry about, and it's a collection of them.
Wow.
So if you type in Google Reddit space Linus rants, you will find the collection. He does lay into people.
Now, is it all justified? I know sometimes it is, but...
One of them was really funny because is he wrong? No. He talked about how people don't properly put together all the brackets are not in the right spot. So the brackets aren't in the right spot or they're inconsistent code formatting. Mm-hmm. And he's right. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And then he calls out users by name, I think, in there who submitted inconsistently, like you use this type of spacing here, this type of spacing here. And he goes into why it's wrong. And there's a paragraph, I think, of why it's wrong. So, yeah, he is how he is.
Yeah.
We still have to love him because, he's still the head of the kernel stuff and mm-hmm. we like new kernel.
Yeah. Well, that's just comes with the territory, as they say.
Yes. So what do you have for news? That's my rants.
I've got one. Recently, Canonical, they joined the Document Foundation Advisory Board. And they actually did this. They've got a full-time developer who maintains the LibreOffice package for Ubuntu, and this guy sits on that board. So one of the nice outcomes from this new relationship is that upcoming release of LibreOffice is going to be one of the first applications to be available as a snap package. Cool. So that's going to be kind of it's going to be really interesting to see that come out. But I thought that was an, I thought that was something to share with folks. And, they said here, by becoming a member of the project advisory board, they'll provide the experience and insights necessary to improve the presence of free software. Because when you think about Canonical and by extension Ubuntu, I mean, that's available worldwide. So they've got quite a bit of experience. So I think there's a synergy that, that will come out of that, that membership. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Like Canonical is really moving the Linux community forward. There's some people that go, I don't like them. But you can't deny that they're pushing.
They've done a lot.
Yeah, they've done a lot. They're pushing it forward. They have the backing and funding to make some of these projects happen. And Red Hat really did a great job pursuing the commercial market and has its really strong popularity there. And then some of the derivatives like CentOS is just dominant in the hosting world. But the desktop was kind of ignored for a while. And I think Red Hat's great for doing that, but could they have started it? They had maybe an opportunity to do the desktop. Canonical certainly filled the gap.
Well, they had Fedora, but they kept delaying the release. No.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Fedora's a great little distro.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyway, so there was that one, and then there was another one I saw. And this actually, this particular story, although the update came out on Monday, it actually started back in 2013 when the Citibank sysadmin, apparently, he didn't like his review. So, he did some major damage to their, I mean, he basically erased their configuration files for, I think, all but one of their big routers. And he, you know, did some other things just before he left. So this was all done at 6:03 p.m. And then he clocked out at, for the last time, I guess it's, or for that day at 6:05. And, what his big mistake, besides that, was the fact that he texted to one of his coworkers, and he said they was firing me. I just beat them to it. Nothing personal. And then he goes on to basically confess that he just did this.
Yeah.
So this past week, you know, this case wound its way through through the court system, and so this past week he was sentenced, and he's getting 21 months in federal prison, and he's also he has to pay $70,000 in restitution. So, so that was a big no-no, and probably a lesson to others not to do those kinds of things.
I gotta admit though, because I'm actually reading it, it says his statement actually reads word for word: "They was firing me. I just beat them to it. Nothing personal. The upper management need to see what other guys do on the floor capable of doing." God, this is hard to read. I hope his review.
I wanted to spare our readers that.
Yeah.
But that's all right. I mean, they can see.
Yeah. If you can suffer through his, communication. I wonder if the review was, "You are a bad communicator." I hate to make light of it because, I mean, it's a crazy thing to happen.
It was partially incoherent, just the way he had said it. And I just thought to myself, wow, dude, look at what you said.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So yeah. So that was kind of, that was just kind of closing the book on that, that big problem. And then I've got another one, and this should be, and I think we briefly talked about this, Tom, but this should be no surprise to anybody. Only 1/3 of all sensitive data stored in the cloud, stored in cloud apps is encrypted.
And 1/3 actually surprises me. Like, I thought it'd be higher. I mean, lower.
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 Yeah. Higher encrypted.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so, there was a study, that, they conducted. And so essentially this, article appeared in, esecurityplanet.com, and it just kind of laid out the results of the study. So, and when you think about it, organizations, and this is why IT plays such an important role, or at least your cybersecurity folks, at the company, they play a very important role because, the regular folks there at the office, they're working on their stuff.
Yeah.
And so the security folks really have to, be heavily involved with this whole thing, especially, you know, given the recent news that we saw this past week or the last couple of weeks. But they said just over 36% of respondents said their company's total IT and data processing needs are met using cloud resources, and that's expected to increase to 45%. So that's on its way up. No surprise there. And they said Over half, that's 56%, said their organization isn't careful about sharing sensitive information in the cloud with third parties. Because, you think about it, and I take myself back to when I was working for my company, and you're trying to accomplish something, and so you're trying to move data or move information from you to somebody else, and you've got a conduit to do that via the network. And so the focus is typically on that, and that, again, that's why the security folks have really got to play a lead role in that policy formulation and related factors. But it goes on to say that 64% of organizations do not have a policy requiring use of secure safeguards such as encryption as a condition for using certain cloud apps.
Yeah. And, we've seen so much of this as a problem. Yeah. I mean, and I'm always worried because there's so many more. I just look at my industry. There's all these different cloud-hosted apps. Host all of your accounting. Put all of your customer data here. Well, what are any type of safeguards? Because a lot of these companies are very non-transparent. What if they have a Citibank guy working there? I mean, he's only got 21 months, and he may get another job in IT somewhere.
Well, yeah, and that that's a great point. I saw that, and I just thought, oh, I got to share that piece of info. And then, kind of related to that, the last piece I've got here is cloud adoption still outpacing security capability. Security always seems to be playing catch up as technology advances.
Yeah, and sometimes because we don't understand the threats and we don't understand what needs to be done, so that kind of happens too.
Yeah. Sure, and definitely makes sense.
But, like we do, I should say. Well, the people implementing it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to open a cloud company and we're going to store all this data. Because there's even some of the data center that's evolved a lot too. Data centers were just data centers. Data centers now are high security facilities, and some of them have stationed armed guards outside because they go, hey, they need something in here. We don't just need to have a lock and key. We need to really lock this down. So that's been a really big factor.
Okay. So
we'll get there.
Yep. And, one thing they say here is that companies still rely on passwords to secure user access to cloud services. Well, I think, passwords have their place.
Yeah.
But then, maybe multiple factor authentication.
Yeah. I just, back a little bit to my YouTube channel, I did a review on Google Authenticator, how easy it is to use, cause it's such a simple system, and just do it. Like, just use Google Authenticator. Or something along those lines, because, some type of multi-factor authentication will dramatically increase your security. I had a client recently with a panic attack because someone did get their password, but they had two-factor. And that's what prompted them was they had two-factor SMS because the thing they were using only had that support, which is fine. They got an SMS message wanting to log in, and that freaked them out. And I said, well, one, got to change your password because clearly someone knows it. Good news is without that second piece of authentication,
they would have been in.
They did not get into your stuff. So you're good. So that, and I did suggest to them that, the good and bad, as long as you're getting login notifications, you're good. But with Google Authenticator, because it's a time based, you won't know someone has your password because they're banging away at it. And the only thing Google does is let you know that someone may have tried to log in, but not some of the sites don't do that. They get a bad username password combination. It doesn't let you know. I got to get into it with my bank though on their security, because they will, if you just have my username, you can lock me out of my account. And people were
three tries and you're locked out for 10 minutes or you're locked out for a day.
You have to call them to unlock it. And so every time I don't know who was trying.
That sounds like a prank.
That's what I told them. I said, I don't know how you guys set your systems up here, and it's a smaller credit union. So I can actually talk to the people in charge.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what you guys did, but I said, I don't guess. They're like, well, you're guessing your password wrong. I said, no, I can tell you what IP address I have. I said, if you want to share with me what IP address banged on it, turns out if I understood it correctly from the IT guy who was being Mr. Vague,
Mr. Vague.
Yeah. They were not blocking.
Was that his name?
Yeah. No kidding. They weren't blocking foreign IPs. And I'm like, stop that. That's something you guys need to do. If it's not in the US because you're a small local bank, I'm going to lay it out there. You don't have a lot of users in China having accounts here, right?
No. No, but somebody from China or Russia or wherever could log into a local VPN
right.
VPS service or VPN. Oh, okay. Because that would leave too many tracks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and and they have a fear of being in the U.S., and there is a lot of lack of blocking.
Okay.
Because we see all kinds of attacks on our system, mm-hmm. and a lot of it is from foreign places. That's where most of the attacks just originate from, because there's not even a need to hide it. So they don't got to pay for a VPS service.
Oh, sure. There's, okay.
If I told you the IP address of where it came from in China, the FBI would go, so? Mm-hmm. You know, same with Russia. It came originating in Croatia. Who cares? It's Croatia. We're not going over there. Mm-hmm. They don't have a rule against it there. So. Mm-hmm. You don't even need to hide yourself.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that makes sense.
You're not violating laws in Croatia when you try to hack a U.S. bank.
Okay.
Maybe you are, but I don't think there's any enforcement on that, hence the popularity of those areas for hacking.
Do you know I'm half Croatian?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and speaking of that, I'm gonna diverge just a yep. teeny bit here. My sister went to, I want to say it's Ancestry.com or the place where you can do the DNA.
Oh, cool.
And it was really fascinating, the information she got back. I've got, it's like 4% Scandinavian. Cool. I had no idea. And then I've got the Eastern European is very prevalent, and there's a little Jewish stuff way back, way back.
We're really curious how accurate it is. So we were thinking uh-huh. about sending a sample from my friend's dog in. Just to see what they say. Because if they tell me it's like, if his dog's German, I'd be like, no, it's a poodle.
It's a shepherd?
Yeah.
Well, so if they say, well, it's French.
I want to know if they're faking the results. 100% French. I want to know if they're faking. I want to know. Are they fake?
Well, here's the thing, though.
Identify the breed of dog,
well, you're gonna
hats
have to pay,
off to them.
You're going to have.
Yeah, we know you have to pay to do it.
You have to pay to do it, but it might be worthwhile.
To us, it's the entertainment value of it.
Well, and of course, dog, you know, as far as the genes go, clearly different. But yeah. Human chromosomes, what do we got? 23 pairs?
23.
All right. How many do dogs have?
I'd have to Google that. Not 23?
All right. So if they run any kind of basic test like that, you'll be outed immediately.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. You know, are they running those basic tests?
Uh-huh. So the person's name will be Arf Shepherd or what?
Arf Shepherd. And you know who right. the lady that owns that, do you know who she's married to?
No.
Google.
She's married to Google.
Yes. She's the wife of
Sergey Brin?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everyone thought that was a little odd, except for me. Who goes, of course. Where else are you going to have all that data stored?
Mm-hmm.
They were apparently they have some partnerships with Google, and so there's
okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's a happy marriage.
Okay,
I don't know about their actual marriage, but you need a lot of data. You have a lot of DNA. That's actually, if I'm not mistaken, how Google got into some of the projects they're working on with healthcare was by having all that research sent to them.
Okay,
and Google's anonymizing it; they're just using it for genetic researching. Mm-hmm. But interesting.
Yeah,
conspiracy and dark sounding.
All right. Well, little did I know that my little diverging there would lead to this.
It would come right back to this.
Yeah. All right. But I wanted to mention that.
No, it's interesting, though.
Yeah. So. All right.
That's what I got for the news. And I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right.
So I guess we've come to the end of the show.
We've come to the end of the show. What do we do now?
Well, we actually have some music.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
I'm not certain we're going to be able to share that because we don't have live and it doesn't really matter.
Well, we're going to insert it.
We're going to insert it. That's
so right. So right here is where we'll insert the music.
That's right. And it is from a group called Animal Boy. And the album is Farmer's Pride. I'm not going to tell you the search I used to get this. And the song is Get High. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 202.
Excused absence.
That's right. I'm Mary Tomich.
And I'm Tom Lawrence, missing Tony Bemis.
That's right. See you next time.
All right.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy.
And me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.